Hi, you guys. Welcome to a new episode of Understanding the Misunderstood. I am really happy to be back. I know I haven't done an episode in a while, but I wanted to come back here to my space. I have some candles lit next to me just to kind of get in the mood because this is a very dark and deep topic that we're going to be diving into today. I'm not saying that the other topics weren't dark or deep, but this one is definitely one of the most scary things to talk about. So I just wanted to give a little disclaimer and trigger warning that we are going to be talking about self-harm in this episode. And if that is something that you are uncomfortable listening to or talking about or just hearing about in general, please click off of this episode. And I just wanted to give that for anyone who is thinking of listening to this and who might be dealing with self-harm and who might not want to kind of listen to this episode. So I hope that kind of clears everything up and helps a lot of you to feel comfortable in what you're listening to, because I do not want anyone on here to be triggered in any way. So let's just get right into it. Basically, to kind of summarize what self-harm is, it's pretty self-explanatory, but it is also known as like self-injurious behavior, and it's when a person hurts themselves as a means of coping with either difficult feelings, painful memories, or overwhelming situations. So the most common form of self-harm that I think we all think of is cutting yourself. And some of the most common places to cut are your arms, inner thighs, and chest. However, cutting is not the only form of self-harm. In reality, there are actually a lot more ways that people can self-harm. So I'm actually going to give some examples. Some examples of other ways people can self-harm are through hitting or punching themselves, burning their skin, poisoning themselves, misusing drugs or alcohol, starving themselves or binge eating, or excessively exercising. Self-harm is a lot more common than people think and include a much wider range of actions than people often limit it to in their minds. Now, I just wanted to take a step back for a second and get really personal with you guys, because I think that this is what this podcast is about, getting personal, getting into talking about things that are really uncomfortable to talk about, but are really important to discuss. And the first thing that I just want to say is that I have self-harmed in the past, and it was only one time, but it was pretty bad, and it was during a time in my life when I was feeling very numb and kind of dissociating from reality and just needed a way to kind of bring myself back. I've never really told a lot of my friends or my family because I was really embarrassed that I had done that and kind of stooped to that level, but once I did it, I really realized why people did it and how it kind of gave you this false sense of control and a routine to get into to numb yourself, put yourself back in the present, and stop yourself from feeling disconnected from the world around you. Again, as I said, I know that's very personal, but I wanted to share it just because I know that if one person kind of comes forward with that, then a lot of people can, and we can kind of work together as a community to understand each other and to basically be able to have compassion for each other. And I think that's really important, especially on a podcast like this where we're talking about such deep and personal issues. The first thing I kind of wanted to talk about was some ideas of self-harm that people don't really consider. And these are just some of my ideas that I also consider self-harming, and that is negative self-talk, picking or scratching at your skin, hitting yourself or walls, pulling your hair, unsafe sex, or getting into fights knowing that you will get hurt. So, a little personal story about this. Because I also suffer with OCD, something that I do very often is pick my skin, and it sometimes gets to the point where my whole face will bleed and turn to scars or to scabs or to other pimples. And it is something that's very difficult for me because I can't look in mirrors without doing that. And so that is a form of self-harm because I'm actually physically hurting my face. And that is something I just wanted to bring to light about a reason that self-harm can take many different forms. So as I said, why do people self-harm? People can decide to self-harm for many different reasons. Some do it to express something that's hard to put into words, turn thoughts or feelings into something physical, reduce bad feelings, feel in control, escape traumatic memories, rely on something constant, punish themselves, stop feeling numb, disconnected, or dissociated, create a reason to tend to their physical needs, or express suicidal feelings without taking their own life. So, how should we help someone who is self-harming? The first thing, and then probably the most important thing to do, is to try not to judge them. They are probably feeling really overwhelmed and scared and embarrassed, and it's such a bad feeling when you have done something to yourself and you don't want to share it with anyone. So try not to judge them. Be there for them. Let them know you are there for them. Relate to them as a whole person. Don't just focus on their self-harm. Have empathy and compassion. Let them be in control of their decisions. Offer to help them seek support. Remind them of their positive qualities and try to honestly communicate with them. Now, what should someone not do to help someone who is self-harming? One is trying to force change, acting in a way that threatens to take control away from the person, ignoring their injuries, overly focusing on their injuries, or labeling self-harm as attention-seeking. Now, if you personally are self-harming, here are some ways that you can help yourself. Number one, finding what support resources are available. Two, getting information for yourself, doing research. Three, try a talking treatment or therapy. Four, tell a parent or trusted adult, which could be a school counselor, family member, teacher, etc. Join a crisis text line. Understand your patterns of self-harm. Distract yourself from self-harm. And try and do something, as I said, that will get your mind off of it. So some examples of ways to distract yourself from self-harm are exercising, hitting cushions, shouting and dancing, shaking, tearing something up into hundreds of pieces like a piece of paper, going for a run, making good food, talking to a friend, going outside, etc. So now we're going to just jump straight into the myths and misconceptions related to self-harm, and we're just going to get right into them because I think they're very important to talk about. So the first one is that self-harm is a suicide attempt. The fact is that self-harm can occur without any suicidal ideation. So essentially, what this means is that individuals who self-harm do not always intend to end their life. Instead, they're using it to cope with some sort of negative emotions or trauma, and that it actually releases endorphins, which can improve your mood and relieve pain. Second myth is that self-harm is an attention-seeking behavior, and the fact is that people who self-harm are actually really ashamed and embarrassed and want to hide their behavior. It's not something they're comfortable coming forward with, and it's actually something that's really scary to admit to yourself, especially to other people. So as I kind of touched on earlier, the third myth is that cutting is the only form of self-harm. As I said, cutting is a common form of self-harm, but there are so many others. As I stated, there's scratching, cutting, hitting, kicking, punching, attempting self-poison with medications or toxic liquids, and picking at wounds or engaging in extreme behaviors that result in sometimes even broken bones. So there are a wide range of actions that are counted as self-harm. The next one, myth four, is that people who self-injure don't feel pain, and people who engage in self-harming behavior do feel pain, but they may experience it differently than those who do not self-harm. So people who self-harm are not immune to pain, but they find it bearable because it provides relief from certain uncomfortable emotions, and it serves as an outlet and a coping mechanism. The fifth myth is that only adolescents engage in self-harm. Self-harm is more common in adolescents, but can occur in any age group. This is a fact. This is part of a study, and it's found that self-harm among adults does not require medical treatment, and it commonly involves the following types of behaviors, such as cutting, burning, biting, scratching, scraping, hitting, or picking at skin and wounds. The sixth myth is that self-harm is extremely rare, but the fact is that rates of self-harm are higher than most people realize. There is a sense of shame, as I said, and secrecy surrounding this. However, self-harm statistics show that the condition is far from uncommon. So the data shows that 17.2% self-harm during adolescence, 13.4% during early adulthood, and 5.5% among adults. And other self-harm statistics show that among children aged 7 to 16, 9% of females and 6.7% of males report self-harming behaviors. And a really surprising statistic that I actually didn't really know about is that self-harm is different between males and females in the ninth grade, specifically with 19% of girls and 5% of boys this age reporting self-harm. The seventh myth is that young people self-harm to fit in. A fact is that fitting in often is not the goal of self-harm. Myth number eight is that people self-injure as a way to manipulate others, and a fact is that self-harm is not intended to be an act of manipulation, it is a cry for help. Myth nine is that all individuals who self-harm have been abused. Fact is that having a history of abuse can increase the risk of self-harm, but not everyone who self-injures has been abused at all. People who struggle with eating disorders and other mental health issues are also at an increased risk of self-harm, but you don't have to be abused to self-harm. That is absolutely not the case at all. The 10th myth is that self-harm is just a phase that teens will outgrow, when in reality, self-harm is a serious concern that requires intervention and recovery and help. Self-harm, while it is common among the young and adolescents, it's often a coping mechanism, and it's not a healthy or adaptive way to manage stress. Even if it's not a suicide attempt, those who continue engaging in self-harming behaviors are at actually a really high increased risk of suicide, and research shows that among people who self-harm and are not initially suicidal, those who continue self-harm are significantly more likely to attempt suicide at a later point in life. And finally, the 11th myth is that self-injury isn't treatable. A fact is that psychological treatment is available for those who self-harm, and it can be so effective and helpful. Self-harm treatment can help individuals who self-injure learn healthier ways to cope with stress and difficult emotions, and it can resolve so many underlying issues that have contributed to self-harm, such as eating disorders or trauma. And therapy is such an important part of treatment for self-harm. Medication may also be necessary to treat associated conditions like depression, and these psychological interventions have been found to be an effective form of self-harm treatment. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. I hope you learned something new or took something out of this that can help you if you're struggling with self-harm. And I really just want you guys to know that if you ever need someone to be there for you and to advocate for you, I am that person always by your side, even in spirit. So if any of you ever need help reaching out for help or going to someone to talk to them about possibly getting help, then please let me know or let a trusted adult or friend know so that they can help you get the help and support that you need. Thank you guys for listening, and I'll see you in the next one.